You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Well, hello out there in Archaeology Podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel. And of course, we're doing our Rock Art Podcast episode 165, if you can believe it. And we are absolutely blessed and honored to have Dr. Dubey Pathak. Her first name is Meenakshi, and she prefers I call it by that. And she has graced our humble program. She has done a bang-up job, an unbelievable effort throughout her life on the rock art of India. And with that, I'll let her kick it off. Meenakshi, how did you get involved in the study of rock art?
Oh, it's a long story, actually. When I was a student, I was a school student, and my father got posted in a little small place in Madhya Pradesh, in central India. And we used to pass through those rock shelters. And I didn't know anything about rock art. I was just 12 years old. And it's an old story, almost 40 years back. So when I used to pass through those shelters, and those shelters were so fascinated, I never thought I will do anything. But I always wanted to go and explore. I wanted to spend some time there near those shelters. And one day I went there, I wanted to see, I asked many things. And it was the way my journey started. And then after doing my master's, I have decided to do my PhD on rock art. And during my master's also, I studied about all those cave art and things, because till that time, there was not much work have been done on Indian rock art. So it was not that popular. But Dr. V.S. Vakankar, who was my teacher, he extensively explored rock art in the Indian subcontinent. And this is how I've started working, and I've selected Pachmadi area. It's in the Satpura ranges, again in Madhya Pradesh and central India. And I did my PhD on that area, and that area was very challenging and difficult. I have been asked by some of my senior male colleagues, how will you do it? You are a girl. It's very difficult range, you know, kind of challenges I face. I said, I can do it, don't worry. And I did it, and still I'm working on rock art, and I explored many sites in central India, even in north also, in Madhya Pradesh. There are many states in Indian subcontinent. So the maximum rock art is in Madhya Pradesh, say around 80% rock art in Madhya Pradesh, and I explored whole Madhya Pradesh. Neighboring state is Chhattisgarh and Rajasthan. These two states are also having very many rock art sites, because it's the border we humans made border. But the whole range, whole area is rich for painted shelters.
When you mentioned that it was very difficult and challenging, yeah, to do the rock art, what made it so? What was it, the territory,
territory. Yes, territory, yeah. landscape, because it's all, Pachmadi is the Satpura ranges. It's all hilly area, very steep hillside. So, you know, and you don't know which hill you found rock art or not. So it was like a discovery exploration. Of course, before me, there was a Britisher, Gordon. He did some work, he worked on rock art. But again, the problem was he has dated rock art very young. Of Pachmadi area. That is not true. When I started working, I found a lot of Mesolithic art. In fact, I discovered many new rock art sites, and I took more than 5-6 years in discovering rock art sites in Pachmadi area particularly. And the area is geographically, it's really challenging to work, and it's full of wildlife. It's a tiger reserve area. All kind of wildlife is there. So even I work in tiger's den, in bear's den in the daytime.
Oh my word. Wow.
Yeah. And local tribes used to stay with me. I'm always thankful to them. they were so helpful. Gond and Korku tribes, ethnic group stays there. And they were always with me, and I'm very much thankful to them. Because of them, I was able to explore so many sites. Because they knew they were staying on those forest area. So wherever I asked, most of the time I used to get positive response from them.
Do any of the tribes that you work with still engage in the production of rock art? Or did they know much about the subject matter, character, or function of this rock art?
Yes, of course.
That is what
my research actually. I'm working on rock art as well as on ethnic culture. And at Pachmadi, I found some sites, some very difficult sites. They were very active live sites. They are doing all ceremonial practices there. And it's very difficult to get out to find out things from them. They don't like to disclose anything. They just keep it things with them. But after doing so many years working there, I had a good relation with them, good faith. And one day, you know, I was working in that site. It's very on a higher side. So I was crossing and I was in a hurry to go to another shelter to see more rock art. And I just tripped and I fell down there. I got hurt, my knee, my leg. So next day I couldn't go. I was staying in the forest guest house. Whole day I was in there. So the guard who used to come and who used to provide lunch and dinner and all. So I just asked him, can I spend time with your family or some local people? He said, why not? So he sent his wife and some more. His relatives came to see me. And I was just talking with them. And suddenly they started telling me all the actual facts about their faith and belief. They said these sites, they are, for them, they are like a god. Whenever they have any problem in their family, if somebody is sick or their animals, cattle are not well or not getting good milk or not having good crop, they go to they do manta, wish. That if these things will be okay, sort out, then we'll come back. And they offer things. Whatever they can do, they promise. If they can offer a goat to sacrifice or whatever. So she told me that they go, they worship, they ask, they do wish. After fulfilling their wish, they go back at the site, rocket site, and they perform a ceremony. And then whole village or their whole relatives, they invite everybody and they eat, they make food and kind of things.
Are the images on the sites at all representative of deities or animals, ones that they would go to ask favor carefully?
Yes, of course, many. You know, there are all kind of depictions are already there. But I have noticed few ceremonial figures on the lower level of sight, not far from the ground. I have noticed some white and crude figures, sometimes just dots, sometimes some symbol, kind of thing. And during this work, because at Pachmadi, after doing my PhD, I did many projects also. So later on, you know, just few years back, I came to know during Diwali. Diwali is a very big festival. So these Gond tribe, there are some particular sites, not everywhere. They don't go to, they have some particular site where they have a lot of faith. I mean, it's like some people, one family have one site, some family, they have some another site and Pachmadi is a very big area. So this Thakur guard, who was a forest guard, he told me that after Diwali, next day of Diwali, they go to that site and the rock art is on a very higher side. On the ground, he showed me some deep cube cup marks, very deep, like a bowl. And I said, what you do with this? So he said his mother used to soak rice overnight. They used to brought that rice in the morning for that Diwali ceremony. they ponded that rice with water in that bowl, and they used to offer that rice. And of course, I know they used to make some kind of signs and things on out of rice. So kind of tradition is still going on in India, very secretively, quietly, because the problem is now, like whole Pachmadi area where I used to work, where I did my PhD in 90s. Now when I go, I don't see a single village is left, not a single tribe is there because of wildlife, because a lot of problem is there of poaching. So all the tribes have been shifted from the jungle. They have been settled in some other place by the government, of course, but nobody is there inside the forest. So what I saw, that forest, those ceremonies, the dance, music, their festivals, nothing is there now. So
they're not conducted anymore because of the relocation of the people.
They relocated, and sometimes, I mean, the old generation, they were still attached, but the new generation have nothing to do. And now gradually these things are, you know, vanishing from that area.
Right.
But then another area is there is Chhattisgarh, another state where I am working. I'm also working in Chhattisgarh. I did a lot of work. I did a whole book on Chhattisgarh, whole book on Madhya Pradesh rock art also. But still I have more projects to work. And I have noticed there are some more tribes, Pahadi Korbas, Muria Gons. They are still in touch and have ceremonies and things on that rock shelters, you know.
When they have those ceremonies, are there any particular depictions of deities, gods, goddesses, or any figures representing part of their theology?
Yeah, no, normally they make signs and symbols because they believe their ancestors' souls resides in those signs and symbols. So I found some big, huge rock art sites in Chhattisgarh area. The site is full of signs and symbols and few
signs
animals.
Signs and symbols.
Yeah, rectangular, square, circle.
Yes.
Yeah, all geographical design patterns are there. And well decorated and kind of things. In fact, in Mesolithic time also, we have found many huge size of signs, you know, beautifully done.
Yes.
Hexagonal and nicely drawn. You know, as I said, the Mesolithic time was very artistic time, full of aesthetics are there. So these huge size signs we have noticed in Mesolithic time. But the subject is not over. Subjects are almost similar, but the style have changed. What we have seen in early phase is very mature, very nice, very artistic. But then gradually we see the style, there are a lot of differences in style. And animal is the most favorite theme. It's all around the world, I can say. Maximum,
sure.
We have elephants. Animals are everywhere. And we have varieties of animals. You know, from the elephant, rhino, bison, wild boar, wild buffaloes. Even we have small insects, ants, bees, honeybees. We have plenty of honey collection scenes here. plenty of honey collection, yeah. And these tribes, they worship. Before going to collect honey, they organize a small ceremony in the forest. Goddess of forest, they ask her blessings before going to collect these things. You know, even they worship each and every animal. I have a lot of stories and testimonies I've collected from them. This is what I'm doing. It's kind of my case study. So trying to understand their culture, their beliefs.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to interact with the people and understanding from their perspective.
Yeah, it's very important.
The motivation and the reasoning and the theology, of course. We can get into this in the next segment more deeply, but I think I was touched most deeply by the elegance or the dancers or the figures that appear to be representing movement or that are very finely done. That's what surprised me. Very different.
Oh, yes. I studied on this particular subject, music and dance. Even we have noticed many musical instruments are also there. And dances are wonderfully done. And you know, the dances are still going on. They have plenty of dances, and these dances are not for the entertainment. Mainly these dances are also related to their rituals and ceremonies. They have varieties of dance for different purpose, for different festival. Suppose there is a festival is known as Karma. For Karma, all these tribes, whatever is Kon, Korku, all these different tribes, they have little differences in their ceremonies, but purpose is the same. They go to the forest, they collect one branch, they cut branch, they brought that branch at home. While bringing that branch from the forest to their house, they all male and female, they play, somebody will play big drum and they'll dance, they'll sing, they have particular songs for particular purpose. And then they come home. And they organize a big ceremony whole night. And most interestingly, recently what I have noticed in Chhattisgarh area, they make drawings on the house wall also. And drawings are very close to the rock art.
Amazing. Let's stop there and we'll pick it up in the next segment. See you at the flip-flop gang. Thanks. Welcome back, gang. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. And we're blessed and honored to be speaking with Meenakshi about the rock art of India. And we were beginning to just touch upon and get a glance and a deeper understanding of what goes on in terms of the relationship of the people to the rock art.
Yeah. So that's, I was telling you about that festival of Karma. Their dance and music is for every different ceremonies. They have different dance, different songs, different music. Music, of course, they are using drums and kind of instruments. But interestingly, all these instruments are made by themselves. They try, these tribes, they don't go to the market to buy anything. They know how to make drum, they know how to make a string instrument, everything. So for this Karma festival, particularly the Pahadi Korvas, they perform, and Gond and Korku, Moria Gonds, all these tribes, they bring that Karma fresh branch, tree branch, and they worship whole night, they dance, they do things, and they sometimes they make drawings on the wall. And in these drawings, they make, normally all are related to the nature, mainly all animals. Some particular animals they make, not all the animals. When I interviewed them, I asked them, why are you making these animals? Why not this one? Why not that one? So they said, ki, this is what their ancestors told them. You make only these animals because these animals are good to hunt and good to taste. And after hunting, of course, they used to eat it. So it's kind of hunting magic is still going on in some parts of remote area in India.
So their ideas about the subject matter relates to hunting.
Hunting,
but it also relates to dancing.
Dancing.
And ceremony. Do they have a particular set of deities or gods or goddesses that they are worshipping?
Yeah, they have their own local god and goddesses. Like for Gonds, they worship Budha Dev. It's a kind of sign they make. And they don't worship all these Hindus gods and goddesses. Now, of course, there's a lot of transformations are going on. But actually, they used to worship, even still, once in a year, they worship tiger as a Bagan Dev. And they have small sanctuaries outside of the village. Normally, every village have sanctuaries for tiger, for serpents. They have sanctuary. And once in a year, they worship serpents. They go to its burrow and they do big ritual there. They offer, put a lot of offerings and prayer. So that whole year, the serpent shouldn't bite them. They should have a good time. Similar thing with tiger also. They worship tiger. They go to tiger sanctuary. And so now they have started making tiger statues also. Otherwise, earlier what I have seen, some stones they kept there. Some stones are there. Sometimes they put orange vermilion color on top of it. It's like they are god and goddesses. And they worship once in a year. They offer some animals, you know, as offerings. They give it to the name of tiger. And there are many stories of tigers in Rock Art also.
Do they hunt tigers or are they too vicious animals?
No, actually what I have noticed in Rock Art, there are some hunting scenes of tiger, but not many. Most of the time I saw tiger is depicted as a defied animal or just like that solo picture of tiger you can see in many places. But at Pachmadi, what I have noticed, I have already published this article in Springer Nature,
about
Bagandev. So what I have noticed is the late phase, of course, it's a historic time where people are riding tiger. It's very, or tiger is going and many cattle, cow, buffaloes and cows are going along with that tiger. You know, it's kind of depictions are at Pachmadi as well. So, you know, I was really surprised. So I got chance to interact with one shaman at Pachmadi. He's he was already 100 years old when I interviewed him nearly 10 years back. So he told me a lot of many interesting stories. He was a real shaman, very different. He never take anything from like for to eat. Nobody, he never trust anybody. He was following his all shamanic rules and regulations, you know. So he shared a lot of his stories about tiger from his father or from his grandfather, what they used to do. And even in Madhya Pradesh, the Baga tribe or these Gon tribes, they were able to control tiger. They knew some chants. Whenever they recite those chants, so they were able to control tigers. This is what all they said, and few things we'll get are already published about their.
But that control of the tigers was a reverence, was a not to hunt or eat. It was simply a way to. Or was it?
No, not hunt or eat. No, for hunting only they did whenever if he's attacking on them to protect themselves. Otherwise, I'll tell you one very interesting depictions I have noticed in Pachmadi. It's in a two part. There is a tiger who is shown tiger and human, and he's already eaten one leg of that human. And in the next scene, tiger have finished whole human, one leg is left. Can you imagine? They show the man-eater tiger. My God. Yeah. It's so interesting to see. Like they wanted to convey maybe the message, the man-eater tiger.
So did the shamans use any means of establishing an altered state of consciousness? They use any? Please.
No, what he said, that his father was able to call tiger. There was a festival known as Madai. Of course, after Diwali, there are many local festivals. So during Madai, what they do, they make a big Madai. Madai is like an umbrella, a big bamboo pole. And on top of it, they made nice canopy out of peacock feathers. It's a beautiful piece, very beautiful art object they made. And then they take this madai from their village to there is one particular place where all the villagers get together and then they perform madai festival. They dance, hold madai and lot of shamanic activities they used to do. So before that, going to that place, his father used to call tiger. Tiger used to come to his place and he used to ride tiger holding that madai. Can you imagine? This is all he said. And I said, tiger? He said, yes. He never afraid of tiger. He was able to control him. And another thing he said, after Diwali or during night time, the tiger used to come to their place and his father used to tell him, okay, go and open all the cattle. The tiger will take them in the jungle and then he'll bring them back after a few hours. Uh-huh. And similar thing I have seen in Rock Art. The man is riding a tiger and there is an tiger and animals are going together. And I saw this man-eater tiger. And there are many nice depictions of tigers. Some, of course, some of them are in a very bad condition due to natural weathering, because these sites are open shelter. We don't have any cave.
Are the sites painted sites, or are they petroglyphs? They're always painted.
In Central India, we have maximum painted, 99% paintings. But okay. In North and South, in Ladakh area, where also I work in Upper Himalayas region, and there are only petroglyphs are there in Himalayas. Mm. Maximum, very few paintings are there. Similar thing in South, down Kerala, we have lots of petroglyphs, but very few paintings are there. In Northeast also, we have a lot of petroglyphs. But Central India is rich for paintings.
Did the shamans use anything or any means of establishing an altered state of consciousness?
No, that's very interesting. I asked them, do they eat? Do they do something? They don't. Sometimes they get into trance with music. This is what I myself experienced. I've seen it. I witnessed it. Many ceremonies in Chhattisgarh area. In the remote area of Chhattisgarh, very remote. And so I have noticed the ceremony. And there are particular theme, particular songs for each shamans. And the poor fellow who was blowing that pipe, he was tired. They don't allow him to stop for a single minute.
No.
When they are into trance, and they'll demand, no, not this one. And the more music, more excitement, more they get into trance, started rolling, jumping, howling, everything.
So they get into some sort of a trance, right? Yeah. That's interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Using music, That is very fascinating to me. Interesting.
Yeah, but it's not at the rock art site. These festivals are related to their own, rituals and ceremonies. Maybe they did before, but right now I have not seen thing. But I came to know during some festival, there are some particular sites in Chhattisgarh where they go. Whole village go and celebrate, and that time they do shamanic practices there also.
Oh, okay. So, so certain sites they do.
Some sites they do. Yeah. But the problem is with now that site is not purely for rock art. They have established some other statues, like for Shiva. They made some statues, and their faith is changing. But the site is still sacred. Still people are going there, but now their mind is diverted from rock art images to God. The Shiva or goddess are there. In Chindwara, there is another area not far from Pachmadi. What I have noticed is a huge size, very big shelter, and some rock art is still there, but they made another sanctuary inside the shelter, sanctuary of goddess Kali. And during Navratri comes twice a year for 9 days worship to Goddess Kali. And the whole village of Gond people, they go there, they worship, they perform rituals at the site. And also I have seen few more Bura Deo's depictions at that site. Bura Deo is Gond's god. So you see the belief, the system, this is transforming. The site is the same, belief is there, it's a sacred site, but the images or gods are changing now. I have noticed in many places, and my recent book was on this, and I worked with Dr. Jean-Claude. We worked together for many years on Indian rock art, and we have noticed many kind of things in the Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh and Rajasthan, in these three states. And we did a book on time and meaning on particularly this topic, how things have changed and how people are changing. Even they are not bothering for their own ancestors' images in some places, not in remote places, but the places not far from the town, it's like that.
Interesting. Are there any sites that are specifically identified with water?
Water?
Yes. Because I know that in many places of the world, the sites are all about rain and water and bringing water for agriculture or what have you. But maybe not with India, because they don't need water, right? They got lots of water.
Yeah, because in central India, you know, most the sites, their location is like near water everywhere. Waterfalls are there, river, pond, things are there. That is how people stayed there, because the central India's geography location is wonderful. Many rivers are here, Narmada, Betwa, you know, are with many tributaries. So rivers are there, thick greenery, green plants are there, and wildlife is there. And beautiful shelters are there. So what do you want to live? Everything is there. And that's why we have so much of rock art in Madhya Pradesh, because of the geographical location. Landscape is equally important.
So what you're saying is the landscape, the resources, the environment.
Yeah. Biodiversity.
Played a big
role. Very important role.
In the location and character of rock art in India.
Yeah, it's very important. This is what I have noticed in Central Indian region. It's very rich. It's still people like, that's why I have seen few shelters occupied by the monks. Because the monks, I mean, it's a very old tradition in India. People like to stay in these shelters quietly, alone, their meditation. And they are using these shelters still.
It's transforming.
Transforming.
Let's stop there. And on the next segment, maybe we can continue that topic. See you in the flip-flop, gang. Well, hello, gang. This is the final segment of episode 165. We are blessed and honored to have Meenakshi, the good doctor, to talk to us about India rock art. And she has devoted her life to its description, character, protection, and conservation. Meenakshi, what would you want to tell our listeners about your journey with rock art? What is the takeaway that you have, the most central message of what you've learned or what you think is most important?
Yeah, well, my journey, I mean, I always feel working on rock art makes you very alive and happy, because you are close to the nature. When you are with the nature, your mind, you are mentally, you feel so good. You feel like you are in the heaven. For me, I'm telling you my experience. I'm always happy in the forest and along with nature. And you feel so good in seeing the art, seeing the work, seeing people's belief, the way they have depicted, the work they did. And to understand rock art, I always feel you have to put there in that time machine. You have to realize, okay, now I'm here, like maybe 10,000, 15,000 years back. People were here and they have faced so many hardships. There were so many challenges for them. Even still, they have painted these beautiful sites. They made, they've created pigments out of nature. They made brush. They had such a beautiful life, such a challenging life there. We should learn from it. Now this modern world is so much into ready-made things. I don't know where we are going. It's such a difficult time we are facing. And when I'm there, I feel we should learn from our ancestors. They live such a beautiful life with minimum things and sustainability. Whatever they use, you see the instruments, weapons, everything in rock art is so sustainable. So sustainable. So we have to focus more on the sustainability, peaceful life, stay near nature, and save environment, save rock art. All these things are very important.
How have you been saving the rock art?
Oh, yes. I'm working, like I give lectures, of course. Lectures is a common thing, but we organize many workshops with the school children, with college, with general public. The more important thing is I organize workshop with the local villagers at the rock art site itself. Sometimes, you know, the local people, they are not connected with those paintings. Because as I said, in the interior forest area, fine. Those tribes are still connect, connected with those images or sites. But in the villages not far from this town area, they are losing that connection. They have nothing to do with these images. When I noticed this, I was working in Raisen area in Madhya Pradesh, and I have noticed these people, the youngsters, have damaged some rock art in that area. They have just lime washed a whole wall. I was so furious and sad. I said, what is going on? Then I've arranged a big workshop. I invited all the people, all old, young, kids, men, women, everybody was there. And we have organized a small painting competition. And we sat at the rock shelter. It was a huge shelter. Wow. And I asked them, see these paintings. Anybody who will the best, they will get gift and some kind of, you know, small this thing I've arranged. And I'll tell you, everybody have participated. Many women, many kids. So then we make different categories and we organize a small painting, rock art painting competition. So they made something related. And after that, I get a lot of good response. They said, ma'am, you could have told us long time back. We were saved that. We didn't know the importance of it. I make them understand. I told them, see how important our ancestor made this, you know. So these kind of communication is very important. So kind of thing I did in whenever I go in the remote forest area, I just invite all the villagers and kids and everybody, especially younger generation, because they are detaching. They have no values. They don't know, and sometimes they are damaging also that rock art. A lot of vandalism, graffitis, everything is there. It's a big issue. I think it's worldwide. We have a lot of problems in India. So that is how I'm trying to do my best, but just one person is not enough. Of course, some more people are also trying. Some more students are into it. Now this awareness program is increasing day by day in India.
Are there any up-and-coming individuals who are your students or associates, or are there places in India that they can go to do it, have a degree, a master's or a PhD?
Yeah, there are many students now, those who are working on rock art. Many people are there. But the only thing is, like, for me, rock art is everything. I continued working and I said, I will work till my last breath. Rock art is everything for me. But yes, many people are there. They are students. They did PhD. They are working. They are teaching. Yeah.
What is your favorite rock art site of all the things you've seen? What stays in your mind and you just can't get it out?
Yeah. You know, there are two types of art which is very close to my mind. Is that you said the dancing figure, the S-type dancing figure. That is in green color. So we found green color also in rock art, in Indian rock art. That's in Bhimbetka or surrounding area of Bhimbetka. We found a lot of green color paintings and very rhythmic. Just simple line, simple S line is there, two hands, and they're in a dancing pose. Beautiful, full of movement and action. I love that drawing, that painting. And that green color painting goes to Upper Paleolithic time. As I said, Dr. Vakankar, my teacher, who discovered Bhimbetka, and he did maximum work in his time. So he found green color pigments in the Upper Paleolithic layer while excavating Bhimbetka in Shankar. Wow. And on the basis of that, that green color goes to Upper Paleolithic time. So we have some green color paintings in some in Raisen area. And those green dancing scenes are awesome. Awesome. So I really like that. I feel they were so creative. They thought just to make two simple lines and you see the dancing figure. And it's a long chain of dancing figures.
What does the green color represent?
No, green color is not representing anything. I mean, it's just a kind of color. They used it as a pigment, green pigment of terra water. And after that, we don't see much green paint in later phases. Only,
Interesting.
And other than this, I like those big signs we see in Mesolithic time. They are very very artistic. I mean, making hexagonal painting, drawing signs, which you make so many blocks and everything is filled with beautifully, I mean, Can you imagine? I tried sometimes some rock pieces, rough surface, and you making painting out of brush. And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. You are making so much. You are standing somewhere in this shelter and it's on a higher side shelter and you are making drawings. My God, your shoulder, hand. When you do practically, you'll realize it's so difficult. So
Definitely.
Yeah. So I like these two S-type figures, dancing figures, and those big signs, you know, beautifully filled with intricate patterns, actually.
Are there differences in style that you've noticed?
Oh, yes.
Where the earliest elements are definitely replaced by a different class of elements. Tell me about that.
Yes, there are differences in the styles. Like what I said, we have seen these dancing figures, S-type figures, that we have seen in Upper Paleolithic time. After that, we don't see anything. Probably that was a transition time, Upper Paleolithic to Mesolithic. Those figures we have not seen later on. Only green and some red figures are also there, but the same period time. And we have seen those signs. I said after that we see big, huge signs. And similar patterns, sometimes they did on animals' body. They may, in Mesolithic time, we have noticed large size of animals. And their body is normally filled with intricate patterns. Beautifully done. Yeah. With lot of patience, they made those beautiful defied animals with beautifully. And interestingly, humans are very symbolic. Animals are very naturalistic in Mesolithic time, but humans are very symbolic. Just simple line, stick type figures. Mainly, they made stick type figures for humans.
Is there a particular book that you've published or a book that's written that someone who was interested in learning more about India rock art could get a sense of the flavor of
Yes, I published a book on rock art of Chhattisgarh, Powerful Images, Rock Art and Tribal Art of Chhattisgarh. Then another book is on rock art and tribal art of Madhya Pradesh.
Are those still available? They're still, you can purchase them or are they?
Yeah, they are available on Amazon India. Yes, they can purchase it. Madhya Pradesh book is available. Time and Meaning, the recent book I did on with Jean-Claude on the ritual and the transformation of sites, you know. In this Time and Meaning, I'm talking about four states of India. Yeah, all these books are available. They can purchase and read it, no problem.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And plenty of articles are there. I've already uploaded on the Academia and other websites.
Yes.
Yeah, that can be seen.
And I think Bradshaw did a very nice job promoting and characterizing and respecting the efforts that you put into rock art.
Yes, I'm associated with Bradshaw. I think it's already 15, 16 years, long time ago, yes. Yeah, they are working for rock art. That's wonderful. Peter is doing a lot for it, yes.
Yeah, it's a great platform, and I think we're blessed to have them. I think people are surprised to learn that there's not many people that work for Bradshaw, and it actually is funded by only one individual, and he's a fairly wealthy gentleman who supports that and helps to keep that alive.
Yeah, and another thing is that Rock Art Network is also working for Rock Art. Many members are there. I'm also a part of it.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Very good. Yes. And I think we've had a number of their representatives interviewed on this show, on the Rock Art podcast.
So it's all around the world.
All around the world. Yeah. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners? To sign off,
I'll ask everyone to please come forward and save this precious heritage, because a lot of problems are going on. People are damaging art, and to make roads, to make bridge, there are a lot of political decisions worldwide, and we should try to avoid it. If we can make them understand, please don't do this. This is very important. We need to save it. It's our identity, you know. It is identity of every country. Yes, it's our ancestors. It belongs to us. Yeah. And it's our job, it's our duty to save it. We need to save it. Please do not damage it. Do not destroy it. No graffiti. Respect rock art. Don't touch it. Don't put water on it. That's another big problem I have noticed everywhere. So please respect it. It's like God, you know, when we talk about religion and many things, it was their religion. Exactly. When they were in the nature and they made things, they had some belief. They thought probably if I will make it, we'll worship it. So we'll get success or
whatever. So it's like an outdoor church.
Yes, of course. It's like a church, temple, whatever we can say. It is. It's there. Because what I have noticed at present, even in modern times, still some tribes, they go and worship those sites. Means what? It's a question of belief.
Isn't that wonderful to see, even to this very day, that people still venerate those places and consider them religiously important and spiritually powerful? I think that's it.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure spending an hour with you. What a blessing and an honor.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you in the flip-flop, gang. God bless.
Yeah. I'm so happy that I'm able to share Rock Art of India. And it's very rich culture. We have very rich heritage. And thank you so much. And please come forward to save rock art. Thank you.
Amen. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.arcpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.